Chattagee and by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads.
Back home in Connecticut, how you doing, Pierre?
Good, Mitch. How are you?
All right. Now what?
Now what? Reload and get ready for Edmonton, then Carolina, then Tampa. So that's what. And the one thing I said on Toronto radio today, I was really early this morning when I did the show, but I can tell you because I went back to my room and watched the game. So I didn't get a lot of sleep. But the one thing I didn't detect, and I don't know who that soundbite was, by the way, but appropriate, no urgency, no sense of urgency at all. It's what I said this morning. I didn't have to hear that soundbite watching the game.
That was Dale Weiss.
Well, he's right. And that's until they can get a sense of urgency as a group and play for one another. I'll give you an example of what urgency is. The other night, the first game back after the All-Star break, the Boston Bruins were playing the Toronto Maple Leafs in Boston. The Bruins had a two-goal lead in the third period. Toronto, rather than say, oh, woe is me and we can't get this done, they come out, they battle, they eventually win the game in overtime, 4-3. They played for one another, they played with a sense of urgency, and they played with a focus. Tell me where that was last night. Again, so this is four straight losses against non-playoff teams. Philadelphia, twice with Columbus, and now Buffalo.
There's not much else to say. We just got to, as players, I mean, you look around this locker room, the answer's in here. We just got to go out and execute for a full 60 minutes, have no mental errors, and try and turn this thing around.
The answer's in here. Pierre, the answer's...
Who said that?
That's
Brendan
Brendan Gallagher. The answer's not in there. The answer's not in there.
It's not in the room. Nope. But that's what hockey players are conditioned to say. He's young. He's learning. It's not his fault. The answer's not there. They need a lifeline.
So why is it taking this long? I mean, I said earlier in the show, Pierre, I feel bad for these guys, these players right now coming out after every... And it's they can't figure this out on their own.
Yep, we agree. This is now they need a lifeline. They really do, and that's why I said to you, and I was adamant about it. And I don't know if anybody asked the question: what did the management team do during the All-Star break? Because it should have been very highly motivated meeting time after time after time. To say, okay, what are we going to do to throw this team a lifeline? We need to do something.
So if they didn't, and if they looked at the schedule and said, okay, well, surely this team on home ice against these opponents will turn this around, and then we can act on that, that was the wrong approach.
But it wasn't trending that way. That's why you need to establish an opinion or a strength of an opinion early. You see that's what you hear me say this to you all the time. You need to be an expert of your team if you're running it or you're working at a high level of management. Nobody can know your team better. Nobody can know when you're strong. Nobody can know when you're weak better than you. And when you are weak, nobody should know your weaknesses better than you. And when you're strong, nobody should know your strengths better than you. And that's how you identify your team-building component. And, I don't know what went on, and that's why I said, I wonder if anybody asked the question, what did you guys do during All-Star break?
Well, Mark Bergeron has not made himself available since the infamous, he's here till the end of the season, it's all on me, we're in the foxhole together, et cetera, et cetera. So until and unless he reemerges, nobody will really have an opportunity to ask them.
That's a fair... And maybe he was out scouting, maybe he was working, but there needed to be a strategic meeting, an emergency strategic meeting for this team during that time.
Well, Pierre, I can tell you this. Michel Therrien was asked about what his plans were for that break right after that last game against Columbus, and he said that's personal.
Okay, well, that's fine. That's an answer.
We're not capable to defend. We give up two goals, like the first goal for us, as far as I'm concerned, should not happen. The third goal, we can't defend around the net. It should not happen. So if you can't defend, you don't have a chance to win. You have to be able to defend.
I mean, they are glaring mistakes, but they keep happening.
Jeff Petrie, no urgency in the first goal. What's Alexi Emelin coming over from the left side to the right corner? What's he doing?
That's what Nathan Beaulieu did in Chicago.
But what's he doing?
It's pretty basic hockey.
This is simplistic stuff that you teach peewees. But watch the board if you're a fan of the Canadiens. And I've told Mitch, you asked me about this with Petrie, and I said, there's something missing here. Remember about 10 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
He was trending down. Remember you were talking about his decision-making on the should be on the point? I said, no. Power play has been a bit disappointing, and his decision-making has been very flawed. There was no sense of urgency in his game last night, and that first goal is a testament to that. But then Emelin comes over and compounds a mistake. And the coach is right. If you can't defend, you cannot win. Too many guys are standing in the slot. Too many guys are not getting punished at all driving the net. It's way too easy to get to the front of the net. Everybody wants to blame the goalie. How many times have they scored more than two goals in a game in the last 20 games?
So if they continue to make the same glaring mistakes, I mean... And the team has responded in the manner in which it has since the general manager publicly went to bat for the coach in the manner in which he did. Are the players not saying we want to hear from somebody else? Are they not collectively saying that?
I don't know that. I really don't. I would tell you if I knew. I don't know that. I'm looking at my schedule right now because I want to try to see if I have any more time around the Canadiens before the playoffs start. And my schedule right now does not show me with any more time to spend around the Canadiens.
Well, you're not going to be NBC's not going to send you to cover a team that's going to be at 15th place.
No, usually my schedule's made in July.
Yeah, but
don't you regular season.
But don't you like go?
Well, they switch up. Yeah. But I'm just looking at it now. Even if they didn't switch out, I don't have any more dates with the Canadiens, so I can't really give you an answer on that. I don't know,
Pierre. If this was going on in any other city, let's be honest here. Just I'm asking you a hypothetical. If this was going on in any other city for a team that had expectations of going deep into the playoffs, and even if they lost their star goalie, would there not have been a significant move by now?
Oh yeah, there would have been. I can take you back to when Los Angeles won their first cup. Terry Murray was the coach. They were not meeting expectation. He got fired. Daryl Sutter came in. This happens in a lot of different places when you're not meeting expectation. Either a player is traded away so they can change the complexion of the room, or the coach is terminated, and that's what they do.
Look what happened in Pittsburgh.
Well, in 2009, is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no, well, Mike wasn't getting the results. Management is working on the last year of their deal. They needed to do something, so it became, I'm going to do whatever I can to save my butt, and that's what happened. I don't think that's the case in Montreal, not with the extension that Mark signed. So I don't think it's a different scenario than Pittsburgh.
Go ahead, Rod.
You didn't agree with the vote of confidence. You said it right away, Pierre. Do you think Bergevin regrets that now?
I don't know. I'm not even going to try to read his mind. I think there was another way to answer the question. I told you that. You don't have to do that. See, in pro sports, people that have been around, and Mark's been around a long time. He's very, very smart. But you don't have to. You can just answer the question by being very vague. You don't have to be forthright on that question because you truly don't know. When you know something, then maybe you say something that means something. But if you don't know, how do you know 3 or 4 days down the road if your coach is going to not have a meltdown and you're going to have to do something? How do you know that? You don't know.
But I know you say he's been around a while, but as a National Hockey League general manager, he hasn't been around
a
while.
No, that's true. He's surrounded by very competent people, too.
But if this is his, you know, perhaps this is some inexperience on his part shining through here. Or shining through isn't the right term, but you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
It's being revealed here.
No, I know what you mean. The problem is that if you look at the schedule, teams that are ahead of them in the standings, they're all playing Eastern Conference teams. So people outside of the Rangers, who are playing a very urgent Minnesota team, but if you look at it, there's always going to be a winner, and if it goes to a three-point game, it's trouble brewing. I mean, it's just trouble brewing for the Canadiens. That's the biggest issue. I don't know if they understand. Well, I'm sure they do. But right now, they're in a very precarious position, and the problem is even on the nights where they're not playing, that they're going to continue to lose ground because of what's going on with the schedule makers. So they're in so much trouble right now.
And any chance they had of hanging around, they have not been able to pick up single loser points.
Well, but they've botched it here in this last little run with the four teams they've lost to are all non-playoff teams. The last four teams, all non-playoff teams,
as they are.
But not everybody considered them to be a non-playoff team, including me. You didn't have them as a non-playoff team.
No, but when they lost back-to-back to Columbus, that told me
no,
everything.
No, that was it. Remember, we talked about it. Yeah, rock bottom.
That told me everything I needed to
know. Yeah, that's what you needed. That's exactly what I said to Tony. We're on the same page.
Pierre, do you think he can still make that move regardless of what he said a few weeks ago?
Boy, that would be tough. That would be a tough one. I mean, he really went to the wall. When you're going to do that, there's usually consequences. I don't know. That comes down to an ownership decision, and I just don't know.
And I know something else you probably don't know is you know, what kind of role, other than as an observer, as a very heavily invested emotional and otherwise observer in Jeff Molson. You hire hockey people. He's got a lot of hockey experience in that hockey operations department, right, above his general manager's 4 years into this job. He's sitting there. He knows how the city is reacting. He sees he senses the stress on the ice and in the stands. He knows that the fan base is not happy. He knows what that could mean down the road, immediately down the road. Does he pound his fist and say, "Listen, I'm pulling rank here," or can you continue to have a guy work for you if you do that? Or on the other hand, it's his team. He's the owner. He can do what he wants.
I don't think he's that type of an owner. I really don't. I think he's more of a controlled, measured kind of an owner that really defers to a lot of people. I think he's more on the ticket sales side, the marketing side, that side. I think they do really good work with that. It's one of the best ambiance places in the league to go watch a game. It really is. And I think Jeff deserves a lot of credit. Their in-game presentation is fantastic. That part, I think he mostly defers to the hockey folks. I never heard, when I was going through my situation with them, I never once was told, you know, you have to answer to this person, you have to answer to that person, there's going to be a meeting here or a meeting. I never heard that stuff. That never came out.
And yet, last Tuesday, Canadians hosting Columbus, I bought tickets to the game that afternoon and went to the game. That doesn't usually happen in Montreal. Empty seats last night, Pierre, it doesn't usually happen in Montreal.
No, that's the tough stuff. You know what? I saw that when I was in San Jose, and that's a team that's on a bit of a run. They've won 7 of their last 10 games, and I only know that off the top of my head because I was there. And there was more than a few empty seats. There were probably 500 to 1,000 empty seats, mostly in the upper deck. But I think, again, when you have come close as often as some teams have, or in San Jose's case, very often, and you don't deliver, fans get anxious, and there becomes a little bit of an atrophied situation in your marketplace.
I for the life of me, again, 8 minutes left. You're putting on the fourth line out there again. Are you going for the win, or you're just trying to get into overtime? And now you're behind a goal.
Now at center, Smith-Pelly trying to strip his man of the puck. Sabres dump it right back in.
Canadians
five
put
left.
On their fourth line again.
They're down 3-2 here. Mitchell looking to get away from Molson.
Michelle, when the score was 3-2, why did the team not go to a shorter bench more quickly?
What do you mean?
Well, the fourth line had a shift with 4 minutes and 50 seconds left when you were trailing in the hockey game.
That's second guessing.
And a couple of minutes later.
Michel, je veux juste revenir sur la question de tantôt. Ce n'est pas une question de second guessing du tout. Mais le fait de rouler ton bas, c'est-tu parce que tu as autant confiance dans le quatrième que dans le troisième que tu penses que ces gars-là peuvent t'en donner autant?
Non, tu es capable de garder l'énergie pour tes deux derniers trios pour finir le match. Tout simple que ça, là.
Pierre, I think we touched on this yesterday.
Yeah, that was Francois Gagne, I think. It was fading in and out. I could hardly hear it, but I heard the coach's response.
Yeah, and that was Mitch asking him.
Yeah, and I heard Mitch Gallo's question, which was very strong and very well done. That's an appropriate question. It's a hard question, but an appropriate question.
Absolutely. We talked. There is no margin for error for this team, and that means the people behind the bench, too, during games. You can't... You are leaving yourself open to this kind of scrutiny, and you have to understand it. I get it that he senses his job is slipping away here. We all know that.
Yep.
And we all know that there's steam coming out of his ears, but he also has to understand that we have a job to do. And that's when you have the hottest offensive forward on the team, Alex Galchenyuk, has scored in three straight games. He's had 15 shots on goal in these three games. And David Desharnais has gone pointless in four, and he's had two shots total in those four games. And Desharnais ends up playing 3 minutes more than Galchenyuk. That's a legitimate question to ask.
That's a legit question, and so is the one that Mitch Gallo posed about the fourth line. Very legitimate, and it's nothing personal. And I'm sure Michelle understands that. It's just not very comfortable to have to answer those questions. But again, that I did not detect. And that's why I said what I said on Toronto radio this morning. I did not detect any urgency in a lot of different facets of the game. I just did not.
Well, I think you put it perfectly at the beginning of this conversation. These players are looking for – they're drowning. They are drowning. They're waving a white flag.
Yeah.
They need help.
Yep. There's a lifeline that is definitely needed for this group. There's no question. And as much as I love Brendan Gallagher, and I do, I would have him on my team in a second if I had a team. The truth is that the answers aren't in the room. They tried that. They've had more than enough opportunity to provide a correct answer, and they failed on every time they've had the chance to answer.
Hedman for Kucherov. Cross-ice pass. The shot. Score! It's Johnson! 2-1 Tampa Bay!
Boy, when you can go tape to tape like that and receive pass and get it off in one fell swoop, that's the beauty. Watch Tyler Johnson get it. There's no stick handle there. On the stick and off, on the strong side, that's not an easy play to make.
Last night in Tampa Bay, the Lightning winning again over the Detroit Red Wings. They were tied going into the game. We talked about it being a playoff-like game, as you heard Pierre was there. And I don't think the Lightning have lost since they were given three goals by Edmonton in Edmonton a couple of weeks ago.
You know, they had a meeting on January the 5th. They lost 3-1 in Calgary, players only, videotape included, and they pushed and prodded and challenged one another, and it became pretty animated. I visited with a bunch of the players before and after the game, but especially afterwards, after they won last night, and they were telling me that it was pretty animated, and it was basically a challenge. So then they went to Edmonton the next night and won. Then they went to Vancouver and won. Then they went to Colorado and 1-4-0, and Stamkos was electrifying. He had 2 goals and 7 shots on goal. And they have, in their last 10 games, they've won 9 ever since that Calgary game. They've won 9 of 10. So the room was policed, not by the coaches. The answers were in the room there. They policed one another and challenged one another, and nobody took it personally, and they went out and played hard, and now look where they are. And by the way, you never want to number your lines. But right now, the best third line in the league is Valtteri Filppula, Ryan Callahan, and JT Brown. It isn't even close. They're dominant. Dominant. They devoured Zetterberg and Larkin and Abdelkader last night. Devoured them.
Mike Babcock, 1,000 tonight. Once the puck drops.
Back and forth today.
Do we have a clip, Gallo? Let's hear from Mike before we say goodbye to Pierre. Mike Babcock.
You're trying to be the best you can be. I want to be the best coach in my generation. You know, guys are making it hard for you. Q's making it hard for you. Daryl Sutter's making it hard for you.
Joel Quenneville and Daryl Sutter.
That's why I was laughing. We were texting today. That was pretty neat. Good for him. That's an amazing accomplishment. Obviously, not easy league to be in for as long as he's been in it. So I'm really happy for him. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for coaches around the league because you saw what happened after he got his contract. Quenneville got his. Claude Julien got some bump up. So coaches around the league are starting to be respected more and more. They're being compensated more highly because of what Mike was able to do. So I have a lot of time and respect for that.
Tomorrow afternoon, the Friday scrum edition of Habs Lunch at noon will kick off with Mr. Jim Harbaugh. How about that, Pierre?
Wow. Now, how did you get that done?
That was all Rod Francis here, a producer extraordinaire.
What you need to ask him is, how did he get Lou Holtz to their signing party? And
that was quite the production, huh?
Oh, my gosh. It was fantastic. I have to hang around. We got a lot of Michigan people that work on our show, so I have to hear everything about the maize and blue all the time. I am a fan, though. I will tell you. I like watch. You know what? I've had a chance to go watch football games there, hockey games there. I like going to Ann Arbor. It's a neat place. It really is. That being said, those guys are unbelievable. They're going to be good, Mitch. And they got the number one player in the country, a kid from Paramus Catholic High School in New Jersey, who's a huge lineman. I mean, that's pretty strong recruiting right there to be able to get a kid to go from New Jersey to Michigan like that. Well done by Jim Harbaugh.
And it sure ain't easy to succeed in coaching millionaire professionals and college kids.
No, I agree. But, you know, that's the one. I think he learned a lot from his father, who was a great coach. He learned a lot from Ditka, who he played for. I think he learned a lot over time, you know, in terms of people that he worked for or worked around. And I think that's one of the things. If I ever became a general manager, if I was hiring a coach, pedigree would matter so much. Who'd you learn from? Who'd you work with? Who'd you play with? I mean, those things matter. You know, they matter a lot. And that will dictate the kind of style of play you're going to get in terms of the way your coach is going to dictate the style of play.
That is at noon tomorrow.
That's a great get, by the way. I might have to listen to that. Noon tomorrow, I'm trying to figure out what I'll be doing. I'll try to get on the Internet and listen to that.
Talk to you at 5 tomorrow.
Yes, I'll be ready for 5. Thank you, sir. Have a good night, everybody.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Montreal's messiest sandwich, Dagwood's Chili Dag, with pepperoni, cheese, peppers, onions. Dagwood's famous chili and sauce comes with a bib. Melnick in the afternoon is brought to you by... The-